fantasy football today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
Your friends don't play fantasy? LOL. What a bunch of nerds.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Celebrate, everybody. It's legal again. End zone celebrations. I don't know, elaborate ones anyway, are coming back. Welcome to Fantasy Football Today. We're not really talking about that much, but Heath is here, Jamie's here, I'm Adam, I'm here. We're going to look at Jamie and Heath's rankings, find some differences, some disagreements, and talk it out and hug it out. And good afternoon, fellas.
Good afternoon, sir.
Whew. Out of breath.
Already?
Yeah, I am. But, you know, ready to settle in here, talk about Zach Ertz for some reason. Update the Julio Jones versus Mike Evans thing, and Jamie's got the fourth pick in a PPR draft tonight, so we'll talk about some strategy and much more. Heath, how are you?
Fantastic. Just on the edge of my seat, waiting to see if the longest streak in college sports ends today.
Okay, we're not gonna bring that up. Hey, I'm going to talk about a lot of different random things today, including, you know, the...
You owe me an apology, by the way.
Why do I owe you an apology?
Because on our last podcast, you chastised me about a fantasy baseball move that we made.
It's true. And you would have been right, but we won anyway, so...
No, not would have been right.
You were right.
I was right.
And you asked me. You didn't say, let's go with Berríos. You said Berríos or Stroman. I said Stroman. You did not say...
Yes, but then you chastised me about it.
I did chastise you. I want to talk about Zach Ertz. I don't know why. I was just thinking, like, hey, could Zach Ertz break out for the third year in a row? We're going to ask that question. Are we going to?
He's trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, everything's trending in the right direction for him, except for the addition of Alshon Jeffrey and the addition of Torrey Smith. I would say, right?
That could help, though.
Yeah, I don't know that I see Torrey Smith as somebody that's going to hurt him. Alshon worries me just a little bit because the one area that Ertz's game has not come to fruition yet is in the red zone, and Alshon could be a red zone beast there. But if you just look at receptions and yards, he's already an elite tight end. 75 catches, 800 yards each of the last 2 years. He looks, I said before the podcast to you, he looks a lot like Travis Kelce before last year.
Yeah, and let's do some, you know, some number manipulation that we love. If you took the last 9 games of the season for Zach Ertz, and you took his average fantasy points and put them over 16 games, he is by far the number one tight end in fantasy. He averaged 9.55 fantasy points per game in standard scoring leagues in those 9 games. But if you take away week 17, which was a 2-touchdown performance against Dallas, and Dallas had nothing to play for, I'm sure they had a lot of backups in there, and you just go with those 8 games, well, then we're looking at the number 2 tight end in fantasy over 16 games. So he really did finish strong, but he always finishes strong.
Do you remember the year before, if you take his 4 games, the touchdowns would have still been awful, but he would have had over 100 catches if you took those 4 games.
But that's
over
4. I'm giving you 8 now.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. That's why I said he's trending in the right direction, because he went from 4 games of good production to 9 games of good production to hopefully, what is that, 13 games of good production?
Breaking news, if you take the best production from an average tight end, he will look like a very good tight end.
Well, he's flashed. I guess that was the point I was trying to make. All right.
I think the thing with him is, you know, it's who you compare him to. I don't think he's in the conversation yet of what I would consider the top 5 guys, which is Gronk, Graham, Kelce, Reed, and Olsen. I don't know if you think there's more in that group, but
I think he's right on the edge of it.
But that's what I'm saying. I think he's in that next group of guys of Delanie Walker, Tyler Eifert, and maybe if you want to throw, I don't want to put Martellus Bennett there.
You could put Rudolph in there.
You have Rudolph.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No?
Rudolph should be in there. That's the guy I was thinking of. So Rudolph should be in that group too.
Rudolph feels like 1 year wonder to me.
No, not with the quarterback and offense coordinator.
Think so?
Yes. Sam Bradford's track record suggests throwing to the tight end quite a bit. And Pat Shurmur was promoted from the tight ends coach. And so with the receiving core being what it is, unless your favorite player of all time, Michael Floyd, is going to turn things around in Minnesota.
Oh, he will.
Or Dave's favorite receiver of all time, Adam Thielen. I don't know if that's exactly going to happen, the offense is going to dramatically change.
No, he had the most targets at the position last year, Rudolph.
Right. Why, but if he, but that, that's a good thing.
That coincides with coordinator and quarterback change.
All right.
That's
well,
a bad thing if it changes.
Who was the last tight end that Sam Bradford threw to?
Zach Ertz,
right. So he, you know, he was like the number 12 tight end.
When Bradford was the quarterback. That's when he had his explosion was at the end of the year with Bradford.
Remember, he was hurt for a good portion of that season.
Okay, all right. Staying corrected then. It's just such a big year from Rudolph. It was so unexpected. But he was one of the guys I wanted to have you guys discuss in your rankings because Jamie's high. We'll just go right to that. Jamie has him as number 6, Kyle Rudolph in PPR, and Heath has Rudolph number 9 PPR.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, it's going to be hard to get too excited about the number 6 versus the number 9 tight end.
This is a debate.
The range we're talking about there is with Delanie Walker, Zach Ertz. We both just put him in the same tier. Jamie's just got him at the top of the tier. I have him at the bottom of the tier. I like Ertz's upside more than I do Rudolph's. And maybe I have to reevaluate Walker's targets with Marcus Mariota actually getting some more weapons. But I still expect him to get a ton.
Okay. You also have Tyler Eifert well ahead of where Jamie has him, Heath.
The only thing with Eifert is, and I don't necessarily disagree, if we were just running a strict projection of the most likely outcome for Tyler Eifert, that where Jamie has him would be right. But I think when you look at what Tyler Eifert has done when he has been on the field and the upside that he has, and the fact that there's like 15 or 16 tight ends that I'm okay starting if I need to stream them, I would rather take a chance on somebody like him and that upside, and if it doesn't pan out, then I'll just stream the other guys.
All right, there's some tight end talk for you to start fantasy football today. Last week, I thought Jamie was crazy, needed to be examined for taking Mike Evans over.
Say start Berrios over.
when you can pronounce his name right, we can talk.
Berrios over Stroman.
There you go. For taking Mike Evans over Julio Jones in a PPR Dynasty League. So I took to Twitter. I said, who would you rather have in a PPR Dynasty League, Julio Jones or Mike Evans? And congratulations, Jamie. Mike Evans is the winner, 52% to 48%.
I think that number would probably be a little bit different if I don't know how many people probably look at it and say Dynasty. Because probably people just look at the names and say Julio over Mike Evans, which is I think kind of what your gut reaction was at first.
No, I still would take Julio over Evans in a dynasty league.
Yeah, I don't know why, because the production should be relatively close to begin with, and there's the age factor.
Yeah, I still think Julio's better for the next 3 years.
Okay, but there's already a one-season sample size where he was worse.
He wasn't really that much worse. I mean, he missed 2 games, right, Julio?
But you have to build that into his projection. Because
all right, but he had more yards than Evans in 2 fewer games. He had 6 fewer touchdowns. So
he always has fewer touchdowns.
I know, but he's a better receiver. Like I can't sit here and have you can't say this when everybody has Julio Jones ahead of Mike Evans
for this year.
So we still acknowledge, okay, I don't care that Evans was better last year. If Evans was better last year, then put him ahead of him this year. You don't care about that either. The only thing you care about here is age.
I'm projecting it out 5+ years from now.
Well, you're doing 5+ years. I think the crux of the argument is like, how far in advance do you really game plan in a dynasty league?
I don't really like to look much more than 3 to 4 years. I still have Evans as my number 2 overall wide receiver in dynasty.
Behind Beckham.
So I've got Julio number 3. I think the issue is, even if you just look 3 years from now, with Julio's foot injury, I can bet on, he might stay healthy for a whole year this year and just break all the records. I don't know what my odds are of Julio Jones' foot being okay 3 years in a row.
That could very well be the case. That would be the thing that sinks me in that argument.
To play devil's advocate on Evans, he could get hurt. He could lose production with a young, potentially stud tight end on the roster now with a deep threat that he's never had to deal with playing opposite him for the next, hopefully for DeSean Jackson's career, 2 or 3 years. And maybe Jameis doesn't take the step forward that we're all hoping for. So Evans can certainly take a downward turn. I just think you look at what he's done in his first 3 seasons, where he should project to by comparison to where Jones is going to start to fade, like all great players do.
Let me ask you this. Last year, let's say 365 days ago, if we had had this conversation, we had replaced Mike Evans' name with DeAndre Hopkins. Don't you think it would have been pretty close? I mean, Julio would have been a year younger. But if I had said, who would you rather have in a dynasty league, DeAndre Hopkins or Julio Jones? I think Julio would have won. But Maybe it would have been close. And
I think it would have been very close.
But there's such a huge quarterback difference there.
Yeah, I know. But you know the argument I always make against Evans is he had the most targets at wide receiver last year. When he stopped getting the double-digit targets, he didn't do very well. So
right, but the hope would be is that he continues to get more efficient, as does Jameis.
I love Evans. It's just like Julio is amazing.
Like, he should be more efficient, if only because teams have to respect the other side of the field now.
All right. Interesting stuff. So, Jamie, you're drafting again tonight, PPR?
Yes, it's a magazine draft. It's a PPR league. This is the first of two drafts for this particular magazine. There'll be another edition, as we have as well, for our CBS magazine. And so I don't know what I'll be picking in the second draft, but for this one, it'll be interesting to see how it goes with other analysts if they do what I expect to do, which is pass on one of the top three running backs. I can't imagine they're going to go most likely David Johnson, then Le'Veon Bell, and then Ezekiel Elliott. Zeke might be the one that falls.
So you're expecting to take a wide receiver?
No, I'm expecting to be looking at Ezekiel Elliott or Julio Jones at the fourth spot in a PPR league.
And who are you going to take?
I will probably take Zeke. But after a question that was posed to me in the mailbag column that I do, it's making me rethink a little bit about what might be the best route to go in standard or PPR with the top three picks. Now, it's hard to pass up on those three running backs, clearly, but when you look at what happens to you in round two, I just wonder what's the better way to go.
Mm-hmm. Here's the question that Jamie's talking about. And again, he has the fourth pick and will have likely a choice of one of the top three running backs, one of the top three wide receivers at pick
number
four.
Definitely have that choice.
Well, unless the first three picks are all running backs or all wide receivers.
Yeah, sure.
So it happens. Okay. The question is, everyone would love to get one of the top three running backs, but in mocks, I'm not liking what comes back to me at the 2-3 turn. So I guess the question is Le'Veon Bell enough of an upgrade over Melvin Gordon and Jordan Howard? We can throw LeSean McCoy in there as well, to make the downgrade at wide receiver worth it. You have probably a better way of phrasing this question here, but
I think that the question is it better off to come away with? So let's just say you end up with the third pick. Is it better to come away with Ezekiel Elliott and Doug Baldwin, or Antonio Brown and let's say DeMarco Murray?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting just because, you know, not to continue to berate the point about the top eight wide receivers. But I think there's such a drop off from and throw Michael Thomas in there too. There's such a drop off from what those nine guys could potentially do comparatively to what you could get at the running back position from maybe it's Jay Ajayi, maybe it's DeMarco Murray, maybe it's Todd Gurley,
Well, it could be Fournette.
Could be Fournette.
PPR. You know, yeah.
And what those guys potentially bring to the table because of what those wide receivers are. Like, Doug Baldwin should be very good. Devontae Adams could be good. You're hoping, I think, Amari Cooper falls there and takes the next step. It's just a very, it really is a big drop off there. Like, I'm thinking it, honestly, if I take Ezekiel Elliott at four, I'm really hoping to take Rob Gronkowski in the second round.
Well, so why don't you just take a wide receiver?
I don't know if it's worth passing on Zeke to take Julio Jones.
Well, first of all,
as good as Julio is.
If Zeke goes ahead of Bell and Johnson, like if somehow David
Johnson.
He's not
Johnson, PPR.
You wouldn't think, but maybe somebody's afraid of injury or something like that with Le'Veon. Le'Veon could be there at four.
Oh, I'd be thrilled. Honestly, what I would hope for is Zeke and Antonio Brown to go in the first two picks. First three picks.
Zeke and Antonio Brown?
Yes.
And you think
I would love to get David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
Or Le'Veon.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, it is interesting. You lock up that elite wide receiver, maybe Julio Jones, or you go with Zeke, who.
Well, we did this with the last draft with the PPR draft. You picked first. You had David Johnson, and you said you didn't like the receivers that came back to you.
I didn't. I think it's a little different because the guys that I wanted went the two picks right in front of me.
But that's more than likely going to happen.
Yeah. If Doug Baldwin had been there, I'd have been fine with it. But I think Baldwin's in that group just for the production he's given you the last 2 years.
But he's so boom or bust.
Like week to week?
Yeah.
He is. I don't I think that might be overstated just a little bit. I think most of the running backs in that range are pretty boomer bust too. I mean, Jay Ajayi was good for about 4 weeks last year.
Right, but I think the difference is position scarcity versus where you're taking those guys. You know, it's you'll take the boomer bust from that position.
Right.
More so, I think, than from the receiver. It almost feels like you're almost settling for those running backs in the middle of round two to the end of round two. Like, maybe you're excited about Fournette with the hope that he does something, or Gurley that he bounces back, or, you know, Murray. I don't know how you want to, you know, sort of frame all those guys. But the way I approach, I almost feel like I'm settling for Doug Baldwin in the second round, or Devonta Adams in the second round. Mm-hmm. And even to an extent, Amari Cooper in the second round. They don't feel like second round picks to me.
Baldwin has been, I mean, last year Baldwin was very inconsistent. He only had five games with double-digit fantasy points in standard scoring leagues.
It was nine.
What was that?
The year before it was nine.
Okay. Well, last year he did a lot of his damage in three games. He had three games with 22 or more fantasy points in standard scoring leagues. So, look, I mean, even like Brandon Cooks finished right around Doug Baldwin. He only had six games with double-digit fantasy points. Amari Cooper also had six, but Crabtree had nine. Michael Thomas had eight. These are guys that finished with about the same amount of fantasy points as Baldwin. So he was inconsistent. I think that the Seahawks have said that they want to run the ball more this year. They want to get back to their identity. And Baldwin did have a career high in catches last year with 94, I think, and career high in targets too, I believe, so 125. So he does scare me a little bit. And I did ask that question, Jamie, who would you prefer, Antonio Brown and DeMarco Murray or Ezekiel Elliott and Doug Baldwin? And Brown and Murray won, got three-quarters of the vote. It's still going now, but...
Right, but also you didn't specify the scoring format, which could skew it a little bit. Because in PPR, I think it's a lot easier to say, I'm taking Antonio Brown.
Yeah, but right, but I didn't say PPR. So some people probably took it from a standard perspective. Some people probably said a PPR perspective. And that would, you think that would favor the Zeke Baldwin side.
Sure. I think that the thing is, it's, and I had this conversation today. Not with the group that I spoke to, but I had a... I spoke in front of a fifth grade class today, which was great. The kids were awesome. But with one of the parents afterwards, they're like, oh, I guess it's really easy with those three running backs at the top. And yes, it's easy with those three running backs at the top until you start to look at what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy to say, oh man, Michael Thomas, he may fall, or I'll go running back. And you could certainly go that route too. Or you can take Gronkowski. But if you do want to go running back, receiver, you better be happy with Baldwin, Demaryius Thomas, Adams, Cooper, if he's there, which, you know, again, I think that would kind of be a good thing. Demaryius Thomas, you know, it's just not a great, exciting group.
Yeah.
Unless you want, you know, you want to buy into a Hopkins bounce back, which could easily happen too.
Okay. Well, we got a lot of news and notes and some really exciting stuff here to talk about, like Amir Abdullah getting the featured role and a couple of, well, I guess not so exciting when teams say they're going running back by committee, but it is worth talking about.
Yeah, just be careful. The team website said featured role for Amir Abdullah, yeah. not the coaching staff.
Well, a lot of the stuff that's coming out now is just like good podcast fodder, but a lot's going to change over the next few months for sure. Right now, I got to tell you about SeatGeek. You know where I go when I need tickets, and that would be SeatGeek. I got the SeatGeek app on my phone. When I need tickets to a game, a concert, comedy, theater, I look on SeatGeek. You can save money with our promo code FFT. You're getting $20 back with the code FFT. So why SeatGeek? Well, when you shop for anything, you want to price compare. You want to know what are the best prices. In this case, what are the cheapest seats? So SeatGeek will save you time and money by doing the price comparison for you. SeatGeek searches multiple ticket sites, gets you the best price every time. It grades every seat based on value so you can easily see the best deals. I know now when I need Yankees tickets, I'm on SeatGeek. Last year I went to a Giants game thanks to SeatGeek. It's really a great app, and get your $20 rebate right now on your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code FFT. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code FFT. Just to finish up, Jamie, are you leaning running back or wide receiver? Fourth pick, PPR.
Oh, I'll take Brown or any of the three running backs at this point.
So your top four would be what?
My top four in PPR is Le'Veon, David Johnson, Antonio Brown, Ezekiel Elliott in that order.
Okay. Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
News and notes. The Detroit Lions official website said Amir Abdullah will get a featured role. DetroitLions.com. He tore a ligament in his foot last season, so we gotta keep that in mind. But how many backflips did you do when you saw this note?
I'm leading my mailbag column with it because I think it's worth talking about. I, I,
excited about it. I mean, you look at what their offseason has been, and it's nothing at that position, but a lot at the offensive line. Rick Wagner at the right tackle spot, TJ Lang at the right guard spot. They spent 3 draft picks on their offensive line a year ago. And I think they're going to have one of the more underrated offensive lines to begin with. And Abdullah's the guy. I mean, you know, he got off to a very good start. It's a really a game and a half sample size, but you know, the job was his, and you saw what their backfield looked like without him there. Not to pick on Dave again, but Theo Riddick is not a goal line back. And I think you'll see him, in terms of Abdullah, you know, have the chance for, I'll say, you know, 6 to 8 touchdowns. And he'll still be a factor in the passing game, too. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. That's the part that I wonder about. Cause I think while Riddick's not a goal line back, he's a very good pass catching back.
Right.
And I wonder if we give Abdullah 180 carries, maybe close to 200 carries, but what does he do in the passing game? Cause that will make the difference of whether he's a borderline number two or he's a number two we can really count on.
Well, again, small sample size, 5 for 57 in those 2 games that he was able to play last year. If you're telling me that's what he projects out to be, 2.5 to 3 catches a game, that's pretty good.
Yeah, all five of those catches were in week one. So, and then he got hurt in week two. So,
right.
He's so capable.
He's capable.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, I think the interesting thing about him is Dave brought this up on a previous podcast as well, that he seems to be injury prone. I don't know if that's fair because he played through, you know, it depends on how you want to determine playing through injury or not, but he played through the shoulder injury as a rookie, never missed a game in college because of injury. And so, you know, foot injuries, we've seen them be devastating. You know, it's hopefully Sammy Watkins healthy. It's taken Dez Bryant, you know, almost a year and a half to get back. Julian Edelman took some time to get back from it. I don't know the history of running backs exactly off the top of my head with foot injuries, but you know, I think it speaks volumes to what they think of him, that in a draft loaded with running backs and a free agent market where they could have been aggressive to get a veteran, they did nothing.
Yeah, I think 200 carries might be a little low, Heath. I mean, that would have been like 20th last year.
Well, I think you just want to be conservative with him.
Well, and there's not a lot of running backs that are 5'8 and less than 200 pounds that hold up to 200 carries and a lot of work in the passing game.
I would be
happy with 200 touches. If you tell me he gets 200 touches, I'd be excited about that. But I think that's low. I would say probably 240 is the number I'm looking at from him. You know, around 180, 200 carries and around 30 to 50 catches.
Well, here are the running backs last year that had fewer than 200 carries. Forget touches, but carries. Isaiah Crowell, Latavius Murray, Terrence West, Rashad Jennings.
Fewer?
What's that?
You said fewer?
Yeah. Crowell, Latavius, Terrence West, Rashad Jennings, Devontae Booker, Rob Kelly, Jerick McKinnon, Ryan Matthews, Kristen Michael, Doug Martin, Tim Hightower, Bilal Powell. So nobody really, Crowell maybe the closest, but nobody really for a full season was worth starting. So I'd like to see, we'd all like to see more than 200. 200 is kind of low.
Well, I think it's just your expectations for him also. Like, you've been very aggressive in how you've been drafting him in the mocks that we've done. And I understand why, because you're excited about him. His pedigree suggests he could have an opportunity, or his pedigree suggests he could be a great player and the opportunity is there for him. But I think most people are probably going to start to look for him round 5 or later. You seem to be targeting him in that round 4 range, which isn't bad.
I wouldn't say targeting. I would say I took him in round 4 as I didn't really like. It felt a little early to me, but I said, yeah, let's go for it.
He's been a 6th or 7th round guy.
Abdullah's been a 6th or 7th round guy? Yeah.
Just another angle on public perception.
But this will start to push his value up. You know, more reports like this. You know, I think, and MFLs are usually PPR scoring, correct?
Uh-huh.
So his value's downgraded, which I think is a little bit of a mistake, but his value's downgraded because of what people think of Theo Riddick.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we got two coaches saying we're going running back by committee. Vance Joseph in Denver and offensive coordinator John Morton for the New York Jets. Running back by committee in Denver and for the Jets, guys.
Not a surprise on the Jets at all. Like, I think that's what everybody expected. And if they play like they did last year, that's probably going to mean that Bilal Powell ends up with the lion's share of the work. Denver, we've seen so many different reports since Jamaal Charles was signed about how he may not make the team or he may get a bunch of touches or it's going to be running back by committee. So I think this will remain. I'd still bet on CJ Anderson.
You have to until he gets hurt. That's the only thing I think is detracting from CJ Anderson's value is the perception that he's hurt, which, you know, coming off of a knee injury last year, playing through the foot and ankle injury the year before, the addition of Jamaal Charles only pushes him down more. But I think he could end up being one of the better steals on draft day if he does play 16 games, because I would lean more toward Jamaal Charles not making the team than being a featured guy.
Oh, I don't think there's any chance he's a featured guy.
If you had to go spectrum, you know, which end of it is more likely for him? You know, they have a low risk money deal with him. But you can't rule out Devontae Booker, who they, you know, invested a draft pick in. And then they seem to like D'Angelo Henderson, who they drafted. And we kind of talked about this a little bit last week. You know, Dave was, seemed to be very excited about Henderson's outlook for the season. But I think, you know, you look at Denver and what their offensive line could be. If Anderson's 16 games, you know, behind now, adding Ronald Leary, adding Menelik Watson.
Mm-hmm. Say that five times fast.
Yes, adding Watson, and drafting Garrett Bowles, could be a good situation for that team, if not great. And Anderson, I think, will benefit greatly.
ESPN's Seahawks reporter Sheil Kapadia expects C.J. Procise to have a big role if Procise is healthy. And I think more of a passing game role, but also spelling Eddie Lacy. What do you think? Is C.J. Procise a good lottery ticket, we like to say?
He's been a popular pick in PPR drafts, but I think people are expecting that if he's healthy, he will be heavily featured in the passing game. I do think he's their best pass-catching running back. I just don't know. Like, they had, I think, 82 targets to running backs all of last season with all of their running backs combined. He's going to need almost all of those to be valuable if he's not running the ball more than five times a game.
I think if you're looking at Procise, you're looking for him to be a factor in the passing game, and you're banking on Eddie Lacy not playing 16 games.
Yeah.
Because if Lacy goes down, then I think it's who's the best option for them. Is it Procise? Is it Rawls? Is it a shared situation?
I would assume it's a shared situation.
Right, but is it shared as if Rawls just takes Lacy's workload and Procise stays the same, or does Procise now become a little bit more of a featured guy, not a featured option in the passing game? So I think that's if you're optimistic about Procise, that's what you're hoping for, is that Lacy's not healthy or not good, and that Rawls is really the third guy no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, Lacy in his career has been surprisingly productive in the passing game. Just having Procise on the team, he's a converted wide receiver out of Notre Dame. It's not... I don't think we're sitting here like projecting Lacy to make his fantasy impact in the passing game, but it's not a good thing for him, you know?
No, I would expect Procise to catch more passes than Lacy this year. Yeah.
And maybe the Seahawks use Procise with the vision that they potentially had for Percy Harvin when they had him a couple years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and using him not just as a running back in that traditional role, use him more as a, you know, slot type of guy. Get him more, you know, have Lacy and Procise on the field together. You know, be creative with it, because he does have that background. Who knows?
I'm going to read a whole bunch of stuff here, and you tell me what's important, because a lot of stuff's just not important right now. Doug Martin is first on the Tampa Bay depth chart at the moment. Kirk Cousins could get franchise tagged again next offseason. That would be three in a row.
You know what the money would be for that?
Like
for
34 million or something?
No, I think it's 41 million next year if they tag him again.
Are you serious?
I think if I read it correctly, it's $41 million. So they're just like pissing away money with this whole thing.
Ridiculous. Redskins wide receiver Josh Doctson is full go. The Steelers could play more four receiver sets, according to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Devontae Parker's having a great offseason, everybody. And Jacksonville left tackle Brandon Albert is holding out right now, not reporting it for the start of OTAs, according to NFL.com. We know that Albert wants a new contract. And we'll stop there. We got Doug Martin, Kirk Cousins, Josh Doctson, Steelers four receiver set, Devontae Parker, and Brandon Albert.
I'm finding it really interesting, because I'm kind of trying to work through my rankings right now and look at how many touches I think each guy gets. And the Miami receivers, with all the buzz around Parker, trying to distribute targets between Landry, Parker, and Stills.
Don't forget Julius Thomas, too.
Really interesting. Well, for the six games that he's healthy.
Parker to me is the highest upside of that group. But he's got to prove it, and this is the year to do it. Third year, he's, you know, everybody's saying all the right things about him. You can't ask for better reports from beat writers to offense coordinator to Adam Gase to teammates. Look, when he was coming out, there was a reason why he was drafted where he was. Was it 14th overall from Louisville?
Mm-hmm, right
and,
around
and
there.
He says, you know, he's finally dedicated himself I'll buy in, you know, at the right price. I'm not going to reach for him. And I've seen these, you know, these analyst drafts I've been in, people are reaching for him a little bit. I don't necessarily want to do that. But, you know, if he's sitting there and I need a third receiver with upside, or certainly a fourth receiver that you want to speculate on, after round seven, I think it's certainly worth the buy-in.
Well, I do think if everything, and I've never been the high guy on this guy, but if all these reports about Parker are true and Julius Thomas could play 3/4 of a season, I'm probably too low on Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, me too. But I want to see him healthy too.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Doug Martin thing, you know, we've had two very strong examples of him in shape, motivated, and how he's performed. His rookie year, coming to the NFL, and contract year. And everything you read about him, best shape he's ever been in. He was the best guy in their offseason workouts. And the fact that even knowing that he's going to be out the first three games, their first OTA practice, he's first up. I think that shows that, okay, you know, we know you're out for those three games. When you come back, you're our guy.
Okay.
And that's important.
That's Doug Martin. Would you rather have Devontae Parker or John Brown?
It's the one I struggle with a lot. Really do. I'll take John Brown right now.
I think so too. I've gone, like, you know what I was like on John Brown before last season. It stings still, but we've got a good explanation for it. There's not like we've got Larry Fitzgerald playing tight end and maybe JJ Nelson, and that's pretty much all that's in John Brown's way. So if you liked him coming into last year, I don't know why you wouldn't like him now.
A couple more notes here. Group celebrations are coming back, and two players can now return from IR, which is awesome.
So two players could come back from IR and celebrate
and,
together.
Yep.
Yes.
That's awesome.
They can even do a celebration where, like, two of the players are, you know, laying down all sick or something, and they come back at the same time as if they're coming back off IR. That would be very elaborate. I love how Roto World has the news item about celebrations, like group celebrations coming back, and the picture that they put to associate it with it was of Odell Beckham. I thought that was pretty funny. He's definitely going to take advantage of this.
Yeah, he'll do like a thing where he's like on a party boat or something off the
right, right, in the middle of the game. He won't even do that during a touchdown. He'll just do that, you know, during a crucial part of the game. I have mixed feelings. I'm going to be the Grinch who stole football. And there was a point when, before they instituted these rules about celebrations, where I really thought it just went too far. The players were going too far. I thought it was very showy. I'm still sort of bothered by sack dances, especially when people, like, there should be a rule about the score. You've got to still be in the game if you're going to celebrate. You cannot be celebrating.
That shouldn't be a rule. That should just be common sense.
Make a rule.
No, that's just players being dumb.
Yeah.
Well, but I don't know. Like, I guarantee you, in a couple years, people are going to get turned off by some of the celebrations. They're going to be like, oh, these people are just all about themselves. They're going to get really turned off by it.
Yeah, as you continue to get older. Jesus, what happened to you?
I've never,
look.
Getting turned off.
I don't think.
Our podcast just did.
I don't think that people are wrong. Like, I don't think I'm right about this, okay? It's not like I think I'm right, you're wrong. This is how I personally feel. I like robots. I always liked Barry Sanders. My favorite thing about Barry Sanders, he would score a touchdown, just give the ball to the referee. I thought the celebrations got a little out of hand. And
so you hated it every time, which happens a lot, that Odell Beckham celebrates his touchdown.
Yes.
And the Victor Cruz salsa dance.
The Victor Cruz salsa dance was a tribute to his grandmother, so I liked it a little bit more. But I didn't like Victor Cruz because I was excited to see him salsa. Like, that didn't matter to me.
I really like the celebrations. We need more of it.
Kids will like it, and that will be a good thing for the NFL.
Oh, and a related subject, Chad Johnson's coming back to the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. And sad news, Seattle Hall of Fame defensive tackle, also former Miami Hurricane, Cortez Kennedy, passed away at the age of 48. It's just terrible. So, condolences.
And James Bond, too. Roger Moore.
Yeah.
Same day.
Yeah, it stinks. I couldn't figure out. I didn't know about the James Bond news this morning, and I heard when I was getting ready for the baseball podcast, I heard you guys, Heath and Chris and Scott, talking about their favorite Bonds or whatever. I didn't know at the time, but yeah, it's a sad day. A lot of stuff going on around the world, obviously. Just some bad news, so let's distract you and talk football. And let's talk dessert, Jamie. What do you like better, cake or pie?
Both.
Nope. Better.
Both.
Nope. Pick.
Both.
How is this hard, Devontae Parker, John Brown? Cake or pie?
Why can't I have both?
You can have both, but there's two people, and there are two slices, and you have to pick one.
And you're saving one for last because you want to enjoy that the most.
No.
I'll save the cake for last.
Okay, good. You like cake.
You might get full on a delicious pie.
Smart man. I didn't anticipate it taking this long to get to the rankings debate, but I wanted to read a few emails first. You know, we've been trying to find names for what you call settling on a player. And this email comes from Aaron. Just wondering what Adam's fiance's name is, because she is undoubtedly too good for him. So when someone settles on a player, it could be named after her.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. So that would be an alley. That would be an alley.
Okay.
So
this player is right up your alley.
Yeah. There you go. And Jonathan Harris in Baton Rouge says, I really want to do IDP in my league, but my friend, the commissioner, won't do it. How can I convince, or what are some benefits of having an IDP slot? There are none.
It's more scoring.
It's more fun. It's more scoring. It's more individuals to cheer for. Because when your favorite team is playing against your defense, then you're torn whenever they score. But when your favorite team plays against your IDP player, you want that defense to stay on the field the whole time so they can get more tackles.
And I think it's, you know, if you're into big, like, boom or bust performances, like, think about when a player has a 3-sack game or, you know, 2 sacks and a strip sack fumble for a touchdown. That can win you your week. It could also ruin your week, clearly, if you're playing on the other side of it. But what I would suggest is don't go crazy with it. Either you can do one player, just do, you know, flex IDP, or what would probably be the most fun is do three players. So you have to pick a defensive lineman, a linebacker, and a defensive back, or four, you know, with a flex involved as well. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the drafts I just did for another magazine, and that's how the scoring is, and I think it's perfect if you just want to keep it very simple.
Speaking of not going overboard, you are on deck again in the 30 roster spot, 7 IDP monstrosity. Adam,
whenever you want to take me off the
I tried
email
to
list.
But your co-owner would not allow it.
Damn you,
so
Jamie.
Heath had to make me commissioner for something to help him out, and he said while he was in there, I guess I should just take Adam off. Nope.
Oh, come on, man. As the guy who doesn't really like IDP that much, I feel like one would be kind of pointless, so I agree with Jamie. Go with three. Go with D-line, linebacker, defensive back. And a tweet of the day from Dynasty Titus. What do you have as the better dog name? Leonard Fourlegs or Corgi Davis?
Corgi Davis.
I agree.
They're both very good. I'll go the other one. I'll go Leonard Fourlegs.
I like Corgi Davis. And I didn't really know what a Corgi was until this tweet. So I Google imaged it and they are adorable. Very adorable dogs.
I bet you know what every cat is though.
I don't. I have no idea. So rankings debates. We'll do, you know what? This will be good because we won't use them all. We'll save some for later in the week. this one doesn't need too much debate because Heath is sort of undecided.
Waffling.
Yeah. But look what my shirt says. Can you see that?
No.
It says waffle.
Huh.
Yeah.
There we go.
Heath has Tom Brady as his number one quarterback, and Jamie is Rodgers one. Heath has Rodgers two. So Heath with Tom Brady ahead of Aaron Rodgers. Come on, Heath. Let's just make it Rodgers.
You know, the thing is, there's been a lot of debate throughout the NBA playoffs with the way LeBron James has played that how is he not one of the finalists for the MVP? This is so dumb. But I said the only reason he didn't win the MVP is because they didn't need him to. He didn't want to. Like, he's shown in the playoffs that when he wants to do that, he can. And I kind of feel the same way about Brady and the Patriots. And the thing I've gone back and forth on is not whether Tom Brady can outscore Aaron Rodgers this year. It's whether the Patriots are going to choose to do that. Because I feel like the Patriots are like the Golden State Warriors of the NFL this year. I don't see how there's really any real competition for them. I'm a little concerned because they have 17 running backs that they might run the ball a little more often. But then again, it's Belichick and Brady. They can score as many points as they want this year.
I almost wonder if, because of what they did to reload at the wide receiver position and getting Gronk back healthy, is this another 2007 season?
Yeah.
Of let's just attack the record books because Tom's going to retire soon. Show that he could still do it. Show that he could be the first guy at 40 to be
right
a superstar. But I also look at it as their goal is January and February.
Mm-hmm.
And do they almost start to pull back the reins a little bit? So like when they're up,
right,
he starts to come off the field, you know, more so than maybe we've seen in years past.
And I want to look at something because from what I remember and the way I look at this team, like how long is Brady going to hold on to the ball? What are the odds he gets hit very often? Because you got Cooks, Edelman.
A lot of short area
Gronk,
targets. Yep.
Like I don't know how much injury risk there really is when he's on the field. They're
right.
Just so much better.
Right.
But yeah, I go back and forth on it. I think either one is a great choice.
My biggest fear though is the career fall off of these guys when they get older. Now he's clearly a different animal, which is why I haven't put him any lower. but it's just a matter, I think, of really personal choice. I can't fault somebody for taking Brady as the best quarterback. Now that's seasonal. He's dynasty. He's not
well
near
the
there.
Best part about liking Brady the most is Rodgers is the one that goes first every time. So you can wait until Rodgers goes
right.
And probably Luck.
I almost prefer waiting on Luck.
Yeah.
If somebody takes the other two. Because, you know, Luck's track record is pretty good when he's been healthy too.
Rodgers was about 3 fantasy points per game better than Brady last year in 6-point per passing touchdown leagues. That's a lot. It doesn't really mean much. But it is significant.
Though for the Packers, which will take a little bit off of Rodgers also.
They will have a running back conceivably for the whole year.
Right.
I mean, the Patriots only have 15 running backs right now, but, TJ Lang. You know, you mentioned the Patriots, you know, Brady's staying healthy. He's going to get rid of the ball. TJ Lang gone for the Packers. Pretty important lineman for them. So maybe that's tips the scales a bit toward Brady. But yes, most people will take Rodgers first. Okay. So then let's go to a more interesting one. Heath still believes in Cam Newton. Cam Newton was the number 19 quarterback last year. And I believe in 2015, the number 19 quarterback was Matt Ryan. And Heath believed in him. But right now, Heath has Cam Newton 6th, and Jamie has Cam Newton 14th.
Am I going first again? Yes, I still believe in Cam Newton, except for the fact that we all pretty much had him like top 3 or 4 in the past. So I don't believe in him to the same extent. I like what the Panthers have done with McCaffrey, with Samuel. He actually has people that can catch the ball and go score fantasy points for him without him doing all the work. He has to transition now into a different portion of his career. I don't expect him to run as much. I'd still say he's the odds-on leader to lead quarterbacks in rushing yards and rushing touchdowns, but he doesn't have to do it as much as he's done it in the past. I think McCaffrey and Samuel help him a lot. I think his accuracy, his completion percentage goes up a little bit, if only because he's not throwing so much to Stonehands Funches and Stonehands Benjamin. And I think we see a little different, a little more efficient Cam Newton this year.
Okay, we know what the reference is, Stonehands, right? Like, we know, don't throw it to Stonehands! You know what that's from?
Yes. It's from...
Unnecessary reference.
Yeah.
Riverboat Ron talking to Cam Newton on the sidelines.
What were you going to say, Jamie?
I feel like I have Cam too low, but I don't know who I could put him over. That's the biggest thing. It's not like I think Cam's a bad fantasy quarterback. I think he'll be better than he was at 19. The one thing that concerns me, like I agree with everything he said, except for there's an unknown, is how much will he run?
Yeah.
Because Rivera said we can't have him do as much as he's been doing. You know, that's one thing that he said at the owner's meeting. I think adding another running back, as much as he's a pass-catching running back, that's still another person that they can lean on in their backfield. And you saw it in kind of the middle of the season last year. It's why Jonathan Stewart was still fantasy relevant, was because they were giving him those goal line opportunities, and Cam wasn't running as much, certainly at the goal line. And we saw two guys that were better than him last year in Dak Prescott and Tyrod Taylor. They both had more rushing touchdowns than him. So I think with the shoulder surgery and how that's going to impact him, I don't know if he can transition to being a different guy. So I think he's going to have that kind of struggle with his, you know, what do I do when the pocket breaks down and in the offensive line still being a little bit of a question mark. I just kind of see him maybe getting better, just not back to that MVP season that we saw 2 years ago. I just can't see that happening again by his numbers.
What did he miss the 5th game of the season with? Was it a concussion?
Last year?
Yeah.
Yep. It was a concussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Cam Newton, first 4 games, he averaged 36.75 rushing yards per game. And that's pretty good. That's 604 yards over a full season. That's pretty close to what he had in 2015. Then he missed the game with a concussion. And in those last 11 games of the season, he rushed for 30 or more yards only 4 times, and he rushed for less than 10 yards 5 times.
And how many touchdowns?
I'm not sure, but I mean, the yards were just way down after the concussion. So that, yeah, I mean, that does have to be taken into account, but there you go. There's your Cam Newton debate. All right, I'll let Jamie go first here. Jamie has Rob Kelly 36th, Redskins running back Rob Kelly 36th, and Heath has Rob Kelly 20th. Jamie.
Well, there are a lot of beat writers that I, you know, follow and certainly believe in. John Keim is one of them, and he predicts Samaje Perine to be the starter over Rob Kelly. And I think I'm going to have to go back and look at this because I don't know off the top of my head, but you look at the running backs last year and several of these guys, and Heath and I were having this conversation yesterday. Spencer Ware played well, but was he just the best guy there when Jamaal Charles got hurt? Ty Montgomery had some good moments, but he was kind of last man standing and had to be converted from a different position. And Rob Kelly kind of is the same situation. Like, he showed some good flashes in the preseason last year, but they still gave the job to Matt Jones. And then Matt Jones fumbled the ball a lot and got hurt, and then it was Rob Kelly's turn, and he played well. But you see in those other instances, there's been running back upgrades at all of those teams, the Redskins included. And I think it makes more sense to go with the guy who has probably more upside, which is kind of what Jay Gruden alluded to when I spoke to him at the owners' meetings. You know, I asked him about Rob Kelly, and he went on this whole diatribe. I love Rob Kelly. He did everything we asked him to do last year. And then he said, but this is such a talented running back class, it's hard to overlook some of these guys. And so Perine to me is, I don't know. I don't see him pushing Rob Kelly completely off the field and him not going to get touches. But if I had to make a choice between which Redskins running back I would rather have, it's Samaje Perine at this point.
I don't know that there's a ton of difference between Rob Kelly and Samaje Perine, to be honest, talent-wise or the production I'd expect on the field. I saw the tweet. I saw the projected depth chart. I do think this early in the summer, it was mostly just a projection. I don't think anybody's told him we're expecting Perine to be. In fact, he said as much on Twitter.
Yes.
This is just kind of what I think right now. There could come a point in July or early August where that's what everybody's saying, and I'd be glad to put Perine ahead of Kelly. For now, I'm going to anticipate that Kelly's going to start the year as the starting running back because Perine's a rookie, and he's going to have to earn his way to take carries away from Kelly, and I'm not sure that he's really better. I think they're very, very similar talent-wise, and in that instance, I'll just take the guy that's starting at the start of the year.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, I made this analogy, Heath, to Dave just to get under his skin and talk about fantasy baseball, but you might actually appreciate it. Redskins running backs are Texas Rangers closers. They change every year.
Yeah, there's some similarity there.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you for appreciating that. Okay, I'm going to skip this running back one and go to my favorite one, and then after this we will talk about your, well, we won't talk about your emails. We'll actually read your emails and answer them.
Let's just talk about the emails, but not
fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Getting a lot of emails, and I thank everybody for contributing. Heath is crazy with his Jordy Nelson PPR straight up haterade.
Haterade.
He's got.
I have always been known as the guy that hates Jordy Nelson.
You've got friggin' Doug Baldwin ahead of Jordy Nelson in PPR. What, you crazy? But also you have T.Y. Hilton. It started with T.Y. Hilton. You have T.Y. Hilton sixth, ahead of Jordy Nelson and Dez Bryant.
Yep.
And that's, you know, and Jamie has Hilton eighth. And you know what? Like, people are going to have to make those decisions, and it might be six of one, half dozen of the other. But then you go a little bit further down, and Doug Baldwin, eighth, Jordy Nelson, ninth in PPR. You crazy man.
I love Jordy Nelson, and I have many times in the past been the high guy on Jordy Nelson.
Not when I'm around. Not when I'm in town.
Kansas K-State thing?
It's like, this is not an anti-Jordy Nelson take. And if you told me today, Jordy Nelson, Doug Baldwin, T.Y. Hilton are all going to play 16 games next year, then I'd take Jordy Nelson. I expect he's going to score the most fantasy points per game. I'm scared of a 32-year-old that does have a fairly extensive injury history that, yes, he had a phenomenal year. This is going to sound stupid, but I'm going to say it a lot, so let's just get the stupid out of the way. Jordy Nelson lost a step last year. He was not the same receiver. The touchdowns kind of hid that a little bit. He scored all those fantasy points. I'm not taking it away. He was phenomenal. He has Aaron Rodgers. That's great. He lost a step. I don't know why I wouldn't believe that. Like, he's another year older. He's been through a lot. If he stays healthy for 16 games, this might look silly, but I think there's enough risk there to put him behind those other guys.
Interesting.
But wasn't that the narrative, though, early in the season? Then he kind of had that stretch where he was looking like his old self.
I mean, he was still down 2.5 yards per reception over his career. He scored a bunch of touchdowns.
But I certainly agree with the narrative that he lost a step the beginning part of the season.
You think he got it back late?
Well, I mean, you just look from week 8 on, 4 for 94, 7 for 94, 12 for 126, 3 for 28, that's against Josh Norman. You want to say that was losing a step? Sure. 8 for 91, 8 for 118, 6 for 41 against Richard Sherman, scored twice in that game. 7 for 124, 9 for 154, and then in the closeout game against Detroit, 6 for 66. I mean, that it's the Chicago game in week 7 where it was, did he lose a step?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had 1 for 9 in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you got to give him a little bit of credit.
He was better in the second half.
2 years removed from a torn ACL that he's hopefully – look, he's never going to – he's only going to get worse. It's the Julio Jones, Mike Evans argument. You know,
and he's farther down the
Of course. There's such a pronounced track record of when he's healthy for 16 games and Aaron Rodgers is healthy for 16 games. Those guys have – this is standard scoring. So they haven't been worse than the third best wide receiver. He hasn't been worse than the third best wide receiver in those 3 years since 2011. I think it's 2011. Maybe it's more than that. But
Haterade. That spot is Haterade. It's compelling. It's a good point. It's a better argument than I thought you were going to be able to make. You pulled it off.
I'll take it.
Well, it was shocking to see Doug Baldwin ahead of Jordy Nelson. I really think that if the Seahawks are successful going back to the running game, which they're going to try to do, Doug Baldwin might be a disappointment this year. Because, you know, 2 years ago, he was also the number 8 wide receiver, Baldwin. He's basically been number 8 2 years in a row, but he had 14 touchdowns.
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's like we doubt it because he had too many touchdowns, and the next year his touchdowns are cut in half, but we doubt it because he had too many targets?
Kind of. Like I
he only
had
125 targets.
But they went out and they said, we want to run the ball more. You know,
I don't know that those runs come out of Doug Baldwin's targets.
No, but you have to wonder if Tyler Lockett gets better.
That would be nice.
And the downward production for Baldwin from the previous year, because I think it's a downward production, even though they finished in the same spot. He finished in the same spot. It came with Jimmy Graham getting hurt. That's when he took off, and then Jimmy Graham played 16 games last year. And his numbers take a little bit of a dip.
Yeah, it's just that all of his numbers were better except for the touchdowns.
Well, his week to week consistency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, that'll do it. That was fun. Let's read some emails. FantasyFootball@CBSi.com. This is from Michael Rigby in a small town north of Salt Lake, Utah. Montreal.
Ogden.
Okay. Dear Bill, Dan, Eddie, and Chris. I don't know.
Eddie should give it away.
Yeah, it's always Eddie Vedder for me when I
Bill,
see Eddie.
Bill, Dan, Eddie, and Chris?
Mm-hmm. Okay, you think about that. 10-team PPR, keep 2. Travis Kelce, round 5. Amir Abdullah, round 11. Tevin Coleman in round 14. Kenneth Dixon, round 15. Terrell Pryor, round 15. Let me read it again. This is a PPR league. Keep 2. Kelce, round 5. Abdullah, round 11. Tevin Coleman, round 14. Kenneth Dixon, round 15. Terrell Pryor, round 15.
I go Pryor and Coleman.
I'm going Pryor and Coleman. Yep.
Pryor and Coleman.
I thought I'd have some debate over Coleman versus Abdullah, but the 3 rounds.
Yeah, it's hard to overlook that. I feel a little nervous about Coleman, though. He's one of those guys that I feel like I have ranked too high just because he's a backup. He's so touchdown dependent.
Well, it's kind of the same thing as Derrick Henry, but I wouldn't be surprised if Henry's role expands a little bit this year.
Hopefully.
SNL actors, Bill, Dan, Eddie, and Chris.
Ah, okay, yes.
Chris Rock, maybe?
Chris Farley, probably.
Chris Farley, yep. There you go. That's probably, yeah, good call. This is from Marcel Rodriguez in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
Nice.
In a dynasty league, how much would you push Kareem Hunt up your draft board if you are the Spencer Ware owner? I have the 8th pick in the rookie draft. 8th feels a little bit too early for Kareem Hunt, but he'll probably be gone before my 2nd round pick. What should I do?
This is another one where we've got some beat writer speculation, with Adam Teicher saying that he expects Kareem Hunt to lead the team in carries and yards. I would not normally draft Hunt at 1.8, but I don't think this is a bad place to do it because that's right after the break. In my opinion, there's not a clear cut number 8 pick.
We got this question on Twitter. I don't know who the we was. Maybe it's just me and Dave, but I saw a group of us, and somebody asked about who to take. I think it might have been 8. Yeah. I suggested O.J. Howard, and I said to me the fallback options would be Samaje Perine and Kareem Hunt. And the guy replied, okay, cool. I just got Kareem Hunt in the 3rd round. So it could be a 10-team league, you know, where it could be IDP guys. He didn't really specify. But there is a chance that maybe
Hunt
is there in the 2nd round.
There's not a lot of consensus after the top 6 or 7.
Right. You know, you have the running backs with, you know, those two guys, Jamal Williams, if it's PPR, Kamara's in that, you know, conversation. Is there any receivers you think would go there? I don't know, Zay Jones or, you know, Juju.
Juju might, but probably not. It's the tight ends, really. You see Njoku, you see Howard.
We got to work on that, Heath. Njoku.
It's going to be Njoku the entire season.
And then I can't imagine the quarterbacks going ahead of him, but I would probably gamble on Hunt, you know, just because you now have that backfield locked up. It could be a great situation. It could be frustrating, but you know, you'd rather have that security because that's the way you're leaning anyway right now.
Next question is from Brandon from a city west of the Mississippi River.
Manhattan, just to make it up to all the Jordy lovers.
Oh, that Manhattan. Hey, Alonzo, Jake, and Sandman. Heath, is that wrestling?
Two of them. I don't know who Alonzo would be of wrestlers, so.
Okay. Please give me your thoughts on Golden Tate in a PPR keeper auction league. Based on your rankings, Golden Tate is no lower than 12 heading into 2017. What? No, that's not true. He's like 20. He's closer to 20.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay. So anyway, there's a bit of a disagreement here.
Projections. Let me take a look.
I bet it is projections. That would make sense.
Maybe. Okay, but what do you guys think about Golden Tate in a PPR league?
I'm wondering if he's going to, like, if you just look at what he did in the second half of last year, you'd have to be pretty excited about him. I like him as a low-end number 2, but I kind of feel like maybe I'm a little bit too low on him.
Golden Tate was the 19th best wide receiver in PPR last year. No, he was 17th, excuse me. He was 23rd in standard, 17th in PPR.
It is definitely not our projections. He is very low in our projections.
He's really good, though. He was very good last year. I did a draft. We did a PPR draft a couple of weeks ago, and I had him in my queue. I looked at the stats. I said, damn, kind of forgot how good of a season he had. It was a slow start because of the Marvin Jones thing. But then after that, it was all Golden Tate.
Well, and if you look at, because it was Marvin Jones the first 4 weeks of the season. From week 5 on, he was the number 8 wide receiver in PPR.
Wow. Pretty good. So, solid number 2 wide receiver in PPR, Golden Tate.
His numbers, his first year in Detroit when Calvin got hurt, were amazing. Heath just gave you a good sample size of what it could be. He's the number 1 guy there. All that junk we heard last season at the beginning of the year was terrible.
Okay, so this is from this is from Joseph. He's got a question for us, and he says he's got 2 questions. I'll read the first one. Hey guys, how are you?
Fantastic.
Wonderful.
All right. Next email is.
Podcasts without a major. How could I be any better?
Next email is from Duff. No, I read the real question. 12 team, 2 vets, 1 rookie keeper. Any rookie running back worth going for in the first round?
Yes. Fournette.
Okay.
So there'll be. So there's 24 players kept.
Could be 36.
Oh, yes. Okay. So yes, Fournette would definitely.
And McCaffrey. For that standpoint.
Probably McCaffrey, too.
And last one is from Duff. Yes, my actual name, like the beer from The Simpsons. Dear Buckingham, Brutus, and Goldie. I don't know. What are your thoughts on starting 2 rookie running backs this year?
I don't really like it at all.
Well, let's just say you go early in round 1, PPR. Say the 4 pick. You take Antonio Brown at 4.
Okay.
In round 2, you would take Doug Baldwin.
Okay.
Right? Receiver. Fournette in round 3, McCaffrey round 4.
If that were to happen, I would like that a lot. I feel like
there's no way McCaffrey in a PPR league staying.
No, and Fournette seems to be going in the second too much.
Not if it goes all. If I end up taking Doug Baldwin at the end of round two, Fournette's still sitting there.
So I feel like two rookie running backs by the end of the year. I don't know which two, but by the end of the year, you're probably going to be in good shape. Like there will be two rookie running backs, in my opinion, that will be really good by the end of the year. I just don't know if it's going to take 4 or 5 weeks for that to happen.
And I feel like they're not good values right now.
Well, I mean, it depends. Like if we don't know what it all it's going to take is like one report of Dalvin Cook is dominating. He's going to be the starter and then he's going to be like a third, fourth round pick in a 12 team league. And
he's not that far from it now.
And Joe Mixon, it's already looking like he's going to be the guy.
Yeah. But see, I think it's not necessarily the top four guys. I think it's the second group. It's the P Ryans. It's the Hunts. It's the Jamal Williams. Yeah. And then it's who comes out of nowhere. Is it a Joe Williams? Is it Kamara? You know, is it something that's injury related that, you know, somebody takes a huge leap in production? Like, I think, you know, everybody's trying to find who's the next Jordan Howard. And the one that feels the most like it to me is Kareem Hunt, but, it could be the, you know, P. Ryan. It could be Jamal Williams. You know, it's just one of those situations where it's who you're pairing it with those other four guys. Cause there's obvious scenarios of Mixon and Cook and McCaffrey and Fournette getting those jobs. It's the next group that you're wondering who takes that leap.
I guess that I'll qualify my answer. I'm okay with starting two rookie running backs if you're starting your draft with 2 to 3 receivers, Gronk and Aaron Rodgers.
I think if you drafted
rookie running backs,
if you drafted 5 rookie running backs, somehow figured out a way to do that, you'll be in good shape. That's what I think.
Then you'll have 2 at the end of the year.
No, I think that you will, right from the start, you'll be able to figure it out. You know, you drafted 5 rookie running backs let's say you drafted Fournette.
Back up. I'll play this scenario out because maybe I'll try this. Okay. So let's say I take Antonio Brown round 1, Fournette round 2, receiver round 3, Mixon round 4.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's realistic.
Mm-hmm. PPR, yeah.
Round 5, let's say another position or non-rookie running back. And then 6 through 8, Hunt, P. Ryan, Jamal Williams.
Yeah, I think by week 1, 2 guys will emerge as starters for you. We don't know who, but yes, 2 guys.
I mean, the way I have it ranked right now is I have ranked Fournette and Mixon as starters. I have Fournette as low end number 1 and Mixon as a mid-range number 2.
Yeah, but like going into the season, like it would maybe in week 1 Hunt is a better start than Joe Mixon. Just in week 1, maybe week 2, who knows? But yes, I think that of those 5 running backs, Jamie, you will have 2 guys that you feel comfortable starting all season long.
You know what? I'm going to do that tonight.
Yeah! Let's rock and roll. Good stuff.
Unless, of course, Le'Veon or David Johnson. But.
Okay, fine. Deal. Heath, Jamie, thank you guys. We'll do another show on Thursday. See you later, everybody.
Bye.